China MSG.
Guys, we are up and rolling for the first time in forever. Still here.
See, doing good. We're in a new location.
Yeah, I think we're recording from a new location.
We're in a new studio.
Hopefully. You know, okay. So, guys, if it sounds echoey to you out there, it's because we just moved to a new studio. So, we're still working out the acoustics. So, it might be a little echoey. Apologies ahead of time.
Basically, Jeffrey and I went in on a new apartment, and we got a great spot. Has an amazing view overlooking the whole skyline of Shanghai. But
we're super stoked about this. We have this little room which has like this amazing view of, like I said, downtown, Anxinti, K11, all of that, Soho, whatever these old neighborhoods. I think we were living before by Jiao Tong University. So for people unfamiliar with Shanghai, I think we should give a quick geography.
Yeah,
what is the Bund?
This.
What is so the Bund or the skyline of Shanghai? I mean, if you Google skyline Shanghai, and you'll see the Pearl Tower. Right now, you have the Shanghai Tower, the Financial Center, the Bottle Opener. We could all see that from our house. I mean, and that is what we call the Bund. That's kind of the CBD. Beautiful. You know, we saw the writing, all the buildings lit up, which we're super stoked with.
Yeah, very right? Nice view. Very
and
nice
then Xintiandi and K11, all of that is the other kind of also, you know, business and tourism area.
Tourism area, but how else do you describe it? It's kind of
I would say it's the posh area of Shanghai.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It's the place that if you're gonna buy, like as we always like to talk about, our Louis Vuitton bag or whatever, that's where you'll go. You're gonna go to this. This is the posh area.
I would say that's not even a place to buy Louis Vuitton, but the place to go show it off.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's where you...
Yeah.
It's where the locals go to show off. And so tourists go there, but you do have a lot of Shanghai locals there.
I don't know why, though. I mean, again, I don't understand why.
Well, there's a lot of restaurants, cafes.
Nothing, it's all tourism focused. It's not like locals. Like, there's a few.
I personally just think it's what they did to that one part of Xintiandi, that street with the old buildings, and they refurbished them, and then they turned it into like all those little stupid bars, which attracted all kinds of people, and then everything built around that.
Well, I mean, they became a tourist destination. Okay,
yeah, exactly.
So again, real quick, side note, if you're from outside of Shanghai, look up, if you want to know, Xintiandi, which is Xintiandi. Three words, Xintiandi. And it's by Shuyan Land, which is a corporation. They do these kinds of developments. And they kind of transform these old Chinese buildings into like this kind of entertainment area. And now it's frequented. I mean, it's basically completely rebuilt.
Anyways, Xintiandi is the posh hangout. And it may have been developed as a tourist site, but I would say it's like also the local hangout. If you want to go show off. Now, the Bund, that's where you see it's tourist-focused, and you don't really see locals hanging out there so much.
I mean, they're at the restaurants, they're at the clubs, they're at the bars over there, but they're not on the street.
They're not out on the streets. They're not hanging out in that area all the time. Locals are going to be mostly hanging out in Xintiandi, more this side of town.
I also Xujiahui. There's other areas that locals hang out.
We got to talk about this food street we discovered, man.
Oh my God.
My gosh.
Are lucky.
You know, we started this podcast at a time we were all involved in food and beverages somehow, and we did restaurant reviews, and we've gotten away from that a little bit as our lives have changed courses and broadened our focus. But
let you guys know how stable our lives are. This was 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Shanghai moves fast, guys.
Shanghai moves fast. Got to keep up.
The speed of life.
But we're still eating every day. That's the good news. And anyways, as we moved to this new street, we discovered right after we moved in that this is actually a how can we say this? Kind of a secretly famous food street?
Yeah. I mean, it's a
contradiction.
It's super famous among the locals.
It's super famous among the locals.
And certain locals, not even all locals.
Yeah. But for example,
basically, it's super hipster.
Chinese hipster. Anyway, yes, maybe that's it. And let me backtrack a little bit to Xintiandi, because we didn't describe it quite enough. Xintiandi, one of our nicknames for it is like the rhino territory.
Rhino. Go safari hunting there.
Why do we call it the rhino territory? There's a lot of rhinoplasty in that area. It's an epicenter for nose jobs. Let's just say that. A lot of Louis Vuitton bags and cars you don't see in most other places. I mean, there's Lamborghinis and Bentleys and Maseratis.
Yes,
and
yes, yes, yes. All just of the above.
It's posh luxury living hangouts.
I see so many Bentleys and Rolls Royces here. I almost feel like these things are affordable.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
You know, I should look into that when I go back to the States.
Yeah, no, now I'm actually. I think living in the States, if I ever saw a Lamborghini, it was at a car show, you know. And here, like, I'm starting to recognize different models. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Like, remember you were a kid and you get a poster of a Lamborghini?
Yeah, exactly.
Here,
exactly.
It's like you see one every day.
Every day. So that's Shanghai. And then within Shanghai, that's especially Xintiandi. Okay? Now, that being said, Xintiandi is a modernly developed shopping, dining area, I guess, right?
Right, sure.
Entertainment area.
Tourist entertainment
area. Tourist area. Tourists go there, but it's really the locals who are spending the money there. That's what I'd have to say. 5 minutes away, on 5 minutes walk away, we're in an old, kind of run down, very humble working neighborhood, I would say. And when you walk downstairs from our building, you walk out and it's old neighborhoods. I mean, it's basically people cooking on the street and throwing their cooking oil.
Vegetable markets.
Huge vegetable markets.
Just right on the ground. Right
yeah.
On the ground,
fresh meat markets. I mean, it's bustling
fresh-ish
with people.
Fresh-ish meat markets.
Fresh-ish
yes.
meat markets. I mean, if you look in the back, you'd probably see a live cow in the morning and
yep.
see it chopped up at night.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
It's fresh. There's tofu shops. It is a bustling neighborhood, and it's a lot of very small family-owned shops.
I say fresh-ish because if they chop it up with the cow in the morning in the summer by you know, 6 yeah. o'clock in the heat, it's medium rare.
Yeah, all the fresh flies get
to it. It's medium rare.
Yeah.
And so, impregnated.
You know, it's a contrast between Xintiandi and our neighborhood. I mean, it's a very stark contrast. This old traditional Chinese neighborhood and a new modern luxury shopping area. But the little secret is that in the after hours, when people have finished having their, you know, luxury meals and luxury shopping and KTV and nightclubs in Xintiandi, afterwards people come to our neighborhood at midnight, 2 a.m., 3 a.m., and you see our streets, our little raggedy, dirty streets lined with Porsches and Bentleys and Maseratis and Lamborghinis.
You know,
for people coming to get these 10 kuai noodles
yeah,
that are
noodles,
delicious.
Soy milk.
Fresh soy milk.
Fresh soy milk.
The youtiao. I mean, every type of traditional Chinese food donuts. That you can imagine, it's just shop after shop after shop and packed. And on nighttime, especially now that it's warming up in the summertime,
packed.
It is packed with people. And so I almost hesitate to do this. I feel like we're going to pollute this place a little bit.
Oh, yeah. But with our listener.
With our listener. So, listener, don't tell all your friends. So, anyways, what's this street corner that? Zizhou Lu.
Zizhou Lu.
Hefei Lu.
Over here is Dongtai Lu. It's any of those streets.
Yeah.
You'll find something on them.
Yeah.
And and if you talk to like local Shanghainese who are kind of in the inn, they know these places. They'll
yeah.
be like, oh yeah, there's famous Hun Tun.
Yeah, a lot of Hun
Tun.
Famous
noodles, yeah. famous soy milk, youtiao, all of that. And that's bustling until 3, 4 in the morning. Actually,
amazing.
You can get food here any time of night, right?
24 hours. I've walked home here at 4:30 in the morning, and it's interesting because you see some shops are just closing down, and the others are waking up, you know, making their fresh soy milk for the morning so that they can open at 6 a.m. You know, and I've stopped and talked to the shop owners at dawn when I'm coming home sometimes. It's an amazing place. There's always life happening in this neighborhood.
Actually, if you go up a little bit, up Xizang Road, South Road. On the right, there's also a lot of, like, you have the seafood market.
Right.
Other night markets as well, not too far from here. So we're kind of lucky with the food. So around Laoximen, Hefei Lu, Zizhou Lu, Dongtai Lu, around that area, you'll find a lot of really cool stuff. So yeah, so we just moved here, and actually, so just talking about this today, I went online and I started looking this up. And, you know, I'm looking up old pictures of Shanghai, trying to bring this up, and man, Shanghai is such an interesting city. I mean, you know, we all study Chinese history. You, Wally, you majored in Chinese, right?
Yes.
And you, David, you minored in Chinese?
Minored, yep, minored.
Well, there we go. So we all study Chinese history, you know. And there is so much that I don't know. I was just looking up. There's these rebellions that did you know of a Ningbo Guild Rebellion?
No,
oh,
I did not.
Of course. Oh, the old Ningbo.
Oh, the old Ningbo. Of course. I mean,
the Ningbo Guild, you said?
Yeah.
Oh, Guild. Yes. Yes. Guild. I thought you said the Milled.
Yeah. Well,
which is the
that's
other
a different,
one.
The
yes.
other one. No, I mean.
Tell us. Tell us.
Did you know the. I mean, okay. I'm just saying, did you know the foreign. The foreign volunteer armed services of Shanghai were involved in that?
No.
I mean, that's the thing. Like. The foreigners, Americans, British, French in Shanghai have been involved in all these fights and wars, including the Taiping Rebellion, which a lot of people don't know about. But that's a big one. You guys all know that was a big one.
The Boxer Rebellion.
Boxer Rebellion and the Taiping. They're different.
What's the Taiping?
The Taiping where, okay, if you especially to your listeners, if you don't know about this, it's not covered a lot in history, in Chinese history. I mean, it's big in Chinese history, but it's not, if you're outside of China, it's not widely covered. It is the most... epic rebellion, part of history that's just you. It's incredible. It's the guy who claims. Wait, before I tell
he
you
was the
reasons
brother of Jesus.
Of it, yeah. Before I tell you the reasons of it, it's I think what 80 million people died in this
it
rebellion.
Was insane.
The
yeah.
Qing dynasty almost collapsed, but it didn't collapse. It was I think the foreign hold. I'm not super clear about it, but the leader of it
should be
claims
I
to be the brother of Jesus.
It.
I'm sorry, what?
I read two books on it. I can't remember anything.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
I didn't read anything. But it's the guy claims to be the brother of Jesus, the guy who started the rebellion. And he ruled for a while, like half of China. And he like died in like this dramatic death in flames. But anyway, they fought in that, the Boxer Rebellions, and all these other small scale riots and rebellions.
Wait, the Taiping Rebellion was the Jesus guy, and the Boxer Rebellion is something different?
Yes.
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Yes.
Are
absolutely.
We sure?
Absolutely.
Let's ask the China major, not minor.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you, Wally.
What
James
year was
sure.
the Taiping Rebellion?
What?
I don't remember. Sorry.
What year was the Taiping?
It had to be, okay, I'm going to guess it had to be like 1840 to 1860.
So
I mean, it's the Qing dynasty.
So that means, Qing dynasty ended in 1911. Right. So the Boxer Rebellion was 1883.
We could look this up, guys.
Oh, I think we should.
Yeah, let's look this up so we don't
have... If the Taiping Rebellion was only 20 years before the Boxer Rebellion, that's almost impossible for sustainability.
Oh, I mean, that's what Qing dynasty just...
The Qing dynasty was just a...
Dead. I mean, it was a shell.
A slew of rebellion after rebellion.
Yeah, I mean, but it really was. It really was.
Well, I'm just wondering how the fuck all those people died and there's still a country. Right. You said 80 million in Taiping, and then the Boxer Rebellion was like millions. And then
the revolution.
And then the revolution.
50
and
million.
Then
everything
and else.
Then World War II, and then...
And now there's a billion people.
How much sex are you guys having here?
Right?
Yay!
Wow.
Boxer Rebellion is August 1899 to September 1901.
Okay.
The Taiping Rebellion is 1850 to 1864.
Okay. All right, so we're both right with roughly about our rebellions.
Yep.
I thought it was 1883.
Casualties. Total dead, at least 20 million.
Is this Taiping or Boxing?
That's Taiping. Boxing, I think it was only 2 years, so it's much, much smaller.
Yeah, so Boxer Rebellion was like one major incident. It was less, but still a lot of people died.
But that's that's the one where they killed all the foreigners, right?
Yes, the Boxer Rebellion.
They tried to. And of course, you know, they were mostly like martial arts factions. You know, revolutionary fighters with knives and spears going against foreign armies with guns. So you know, there was some mystics who told the kung fu fighters that if they practiced some secret qigong moves, they would become bulletproof, and it didn't work out for them so well. So.
I would assume they just didn't master the technique.
I guess not. Yeah.
Because
so a lot of the rebels were were gunned down.
Well, the biggest casualties, actually, what it says here, was the Chinese Christians. 32,000 Chinese Christians died.
During?
Yeah.
During?
During the Boxer Rebellion.
Boxer Rebellion, okay.
And 100,000 civilians killed by the Boxers in total. That's in total, yeah.
Okay, so it was drastically smaller.
Damn.
There's a little scandal about this. For example, like at Oberlin College in Ohio, they have
no shit. Oberlin.
Yeah, they have a monument to the Boxer Rebellion, and they have the list of all the names of the foreigners who died in the rebellion.
Really?
Yeah. And during graduation, they march under this archway that's part of the.
Why do they have this?
Because you know, they probably was an important issue during that time. It was built probably right after this happened. It was probably, who knows how it was viewed in the U.S. at that time. These Americans were killed.
That's true. It would be huge news, you know?
Yeah. All these Americans were killed in Asia.
Is it Americans or just foreigners in general?
I think it was the Americans who died were listed on the monument in Oberlin College. And so, you know, when students graduate there, they march underneath this archway that's part of the monument. But, of course, a lot of people in protest now during graduation will march around the outside of the monument. They don't want to march under through the monument as a symbol of rebellion against
colonialism.
Colonialism, I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
That makes sense. I mean, yeah. I mean, like, you could see back in the day how it was framed. Oh, you know, Chinese devils.
The savage Chinese.
Yeah, killing Christians.
Godless Chinese.
Yeah. Not pretty much. Pretty much.
Devils. Devil worshippers.
But typing rebellion.
With their opium.
Way more interesting and way more cooler stuff. Guys, if you have time to look this up, I mean, 20 million people died. The whole thing lasted, what, almost 15 years? Absolutely incredible stories about it. I mean, weird Christian sects, weird whatever, monks and everything. And you know, I mean, just absolutely incredible. And this happened, you know. Everyone knows, okay, they have Qing dynasties, they have the revolution, but this was a big one. So, but I'm sorry, I digress a little bit. And on top of that, Shanghai had all kinds of little wars and fights and rebellions and all of that that's going on. And so when they talk about the city of Shanghai, really, until modern times, and I'm talking modern times, the last 50, 60 years, you got to be talking about three different cities. You're talking about the international settlement, you're talking about the Chinese city, and you're talking about the French concession. And they're both...
What's the difference between the international settlement and the French concession?
They're all governed differently. They have different police forces. They have
so who lives in the French concession, and who lives in the international settlement?
So international settlement... Okay, so this is... Again, I'm not... This is what I recently looked up. As far as I know, the international settlement was created by two big factions, which was the Americans and the British. They joined. They had different sections before.
Was this
before.
The early or late 1800s? Late
1800s? No,
1900s. 1900s? Early? Yeah. Late? Or after the Qing dynasty?
During and after.
So about 1911s, 1910s?
I don't know. No, I don't know when exactly 20s, 30s? When it ends, but okay, I know it starts in the 1800s sometimes, late 1800s. It ends with the revolution, really. Well, actually, not with the revolution. It ends with Japanese invasion.
Yep.
Yeah, part of the mass popularity of all these uprisings against the Qing dynasty was that the Qing were viewed as foreigners, but also that the Qing were a weak government that allowed other foreigners to come in and abuse the nation also.
Yeah, actually.
So it's part of the invasion of allowing... The French concession, allowing the other foreigners in, was one of the thorns in the side that got these revolutions to become popular during that time.
Yes, but that's kind of makes sense. But then again, the Qing dynasty also still lasted about 250 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. A lot of people outside, I think you made a really good. Wally made a really good point. You have to remember, if you know, the Qing dynasty, which ruled what you said, 250 years or a long time, long time, is. A lot of Chinese people considered a foreign dynasty.
Was it late 1600s until early 19s?
We could look this up. But, I mean, they were a major. They ruled for a long, long time. And they're considered almost pretty much a foreign power by a lot of Chinese people. I mean, they're technically Chinese, but they're not Han, which is the majority population. They're what? They're
Manchurian.
They're Manchurian. Manchurian. Manchu. Yeah.
So they're considered almost a different. And they didn't want to be considered like the rest of the Chinese people. They're like, no, no, no. We're not the same.
Yeah, absolutely different language, different culture, different writing, everything.
So now, real quick, back to Shanghai. I mean, so we mentioned this French concession. We mentioned, so Shanghai, of course, yeah, it's a big, big city. It was like a little backwater town until really the foreign powers started carving it up.
Really?
Yeah. Until then, it was in Hangzhou, which is very close to Shanghai. Suzhou were our historic, traditional megapolises.
Whatever.
Big cities. in China.
Metropolitan areas.
They're considered the
Metropolis.
Old... Metropolises?
That's where Superman's from.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yes.
So he's from Suzhou?
But
is this where logic we're going?
But Shanghai was never, no. It was like a collection of little small towns, nothing really important here. And it's the foreigners, actually, powers that carved it up. So if you come right now to Shanghai, you know, if you're visiting, I mean, one area everyone's going to tell you, go see the former French concession. If you say the French concession, some people will get offended. It's the former French concession.
I think I might have actually made that mistake today.
Oh, did you really?
Today. In a text message.
One place everyone's going to tell you to visit the French concession. And it's true.
Yeah.
It is amazing. It is in Asia. There's nothing like it, right? I mean, really, I can't think of a place.
I haven't seen anything like
where
that.
Where you see like part of Europe.
Maybe
Macau.
Maybe Macau.
But not in this detail. Not in this grandeur. Because, I mean,
yeah,
I went into this one place, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of it. There's this hotel on the corner of maybe Huaihai going on in Fuxing. On Huaihai in Fuxing. And it's not a hotel, but it was an old residence of a British guy that there, and it was just fucking phenomenal.
I was just walking through there this afternoon. Yeah, just incredible place to be.
Homes and neighborhoods and trees and like just the way they set up the neighborhood. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean that whole there's mansions, there's apartments, there's old French I mean it is. There's nothing like that anywhere. No, I mean not even Macau.
And just honestly, the architecture, design, the skills, and like just the grandeur. Yeah, it's the grandeur of what they did, and they said, fuck you, we're putting some pimp houses here.
We're building France here.
We're building France.
And they did. Oh. They did. But I mean, it did acquire a little bit of China, a little bit of, you know, Asia, Shanghai. And
no,
you
did.
Get this, I mean, just amazing, and if you go there amazing
now,
neighborhood.
What do you see as far as the population there now? I would say a lot of the buildings have been taken by government agencies, a lot of by private businesses, by wealthy private owners. The land value there must be incredible.
It
must be some of the most desired land in all of China. Beautiful old mansions. Interesting, you actually see, there's a new French population there, I would say. You know, there's French restaurants, French bakeries. You walk to the French concession and you hear people speaking French.
Actually, Wally actually made a great comment yesterday. He's like, you know, came to Shanghai, I don't want to be like, you know, all those Americans that, you know, go to other countries and never learn the language. You know, I think I should start learning the local dialect. I should start picking up French.
I hear French here so much in Shanghai. And
I haven't spoken French until I came here.
Yeah.
There's a meme or whatever going around. It's like, oh, we're going to go to Shanghai. It's an international city. We're going to meet all these cultures and these languages. We get off the plane. Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Yeah.
As long as you like saying bonjour a lot.
Right.
A lot of French people here, but it's a beautiful neighborhood, and we to our listeners, if Google it, see where it ends, where it begins. But that's not the only European influence here. I mean, and then we went with part of Shanghai.
There's definitely a lot of influences. The architecture is one. I mean, the biggest influence for sure.
Sure.
We seen it in the Jewish area that we went to, the Jewish ghetto. I mean, not as much as the architecture, but you could see their cultural remnants around there as well.
There was the infrastructure
of old Shanghai was influenced very much by the British when it comes to the sewage systems and the incarceration and the legal systems, and our favorite, 1933, the
the abattoir.
What's the abattoir?
Butcher house.
Yeah, the slaughterhouse.
Slaughterhouse. Thank you. Slaughterhouse. Yeah. So,
what's abattoir? Is that French?
No, I think that's the English word for it.
Is that the English word for it?
Yeah, but I think it's a French word that becomes an English word.
Okay, well, we call it killing cow pellets.
Killing cow pellets. Have you been there?
No, I'm not.
Oh, Wally, you're in the right place. You got to go check it out.
It's a really cool building, man.
Yeah. Okay, so, really quick, if you're looking at, and we could actually, we have this little map in front of us. That's why I brought it up here. But
this a map?
You guys should Google.
Oh, shit, this is some tribal shit.
You should Google the
oh, there's boats.
The old maps of Shanghai.
This is in two scale, is it?
Actually, if you could look, Google the Shanghai Municipal Council map, that's actually what you want. And it has all the old buildings, all the old names. But the French area, French concession was a big one. And the international settlement was slightly to the east and north of that. And it's much bigger. And then you had the British, the Russians, the English, the Americans, the Germans, the Dutch, whatever, Japanese. And actually, it's in the North Bund. North Bund is part of the river. That's where the settlement started first. That was actually the original settlement. It was North Bund. What we know the area is Hongkou right now. That was the original settlements. A lot of them are torn down now. But the Bund is, if you're as a tourist, you come to visit. It looks like and feels like. Like Chicago and New York, right, in terms of architecture.
Yeah, for sure.
In terms of life, no. In terms of life, it's not there yet. But in terms of architecture, it is New York and Chicago.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, if you come to the Bund, which is right on the Yellow River, the Huangpu, which is the main river that runs right through the center of Shanghai, that's where you see all the original British and foreign banks right along the riverside there, all these old buildings. And, you know, it would make sense that people would set up their houses and living just up the river, the river from
actually,
there, right?
Originally, even comes later. That comes much, much later. It was really? Here. It was north of that, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
But yes, I mean, there's a lot of great stories about that.
I went to one of the banks on the Bund. I can't remember what bank it was. I want to say Construction Bank. Doesn't matter what it was before. It's the important. And they had a vault in there, like the old vault. It was from like 1920 or whatever. Guess where it was made? Cleveland, Ohio.
Really? Oh, really? Yeah. It makes sense.
Crazy, man. So they made the vault there, put it on a freaking boat, shipped it to Shanghai. How do you even get that thing off of the boat and then get into a...
Crazy.
At that time.
Yeah.
Even now. Crazy.
Yeah. Interesting.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah.
Not New York, not Los Angeles, not Chicago.
Cleveland used to be the bee's knees.
Yeah, you told me this. Original building, what, HSBC on the Bund. If you guys know AIG, which started out as AIA, on the Bund. So Opium. HSBC, this is a really interesting point of history. HSBC, the Hong Kong Shanghai Banking Corporation, was started to launder the profits from the opium trade. There you go. So now, I guess what they're doing now?
Laundering money for the
British. Drug lords in the South. They're being caught like left and right.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. This is super interesting. They had like drive through windows where like in like South America where and do quote me on this. You could look this up. They installed special windows where they could just drive up and like deposit huge pellets of cash. Yeah, they got caught.
Well. It was HSBC that in the British thing a couple months ago, right? Where they were instructing the Brits how to evade taxes.
Yeah, I think it was them too. Yeah, fucking nothing stops.
Come on, I mean, are you surprised if that's how they started?
There's an interesting quote. It was a Mark Twain: "History doesn't repeat, but it sure does rhyme."
Pretty good.
I mean, they're doing the same shit. So now we moved.
Man,
so we
Mark
were
Twain,
in the middle of the French concession.
This guy, man, he's just quote master.
But Pam.
But whom?
We moved from the French concession to, because of work, closer to the Bund.
And we were joking the other day when we first moved to this neighborhood from the French concession. You know, we moved basically, five subway stops? Four subway stops?
Yeah.
A few subway stops down. And we were saying, oh, I think we actually moved to China finally. You know, it's like, it is an old Chinese city. We're overlooking the old neighborhoods, the old original neighborhoods. And they're there the way they've been built for ages now.
Yeah.
Like I said, overlooking a traditional temple, one of the few functioning temples in the city that I know of. Yeah, very interesting place.
But what happens when you get horny for apple pie?
I have to go back to the French Concession, really.
Oh, man, that's too bad.
Now, the other place that's well-known, especially among foreigners, I think, is Jing'an area. And probably in the center of that is Jing'an Temple, which is another famous spot you'd probably visit if you're visiting Shanghai. That is the kind of the center of the British area, right?
Right.
What did you call it? There's the French Concession and the other international...
International Settlement.
International Settlement. So that would be maybe the center of the International Settlement. And I just learned that from a taxi driver just recently, was the one who pointed that out to me. And it's true. If you go up to Jing'an, you look at the architecture there, you can see it has some similarities to French Concession in that it's European style, but it's not the same as the French Concession. It is a British style. You were telling me today, Jeffrey, that about the original names of the streets over there. They were British names around Jing'an. Hennessy or some of you would hear in Hong Kong.
Jeffrey Road or something, or Wukong Lu was Ferguson Lane. Well, I mean, of course, we know. Xinhua Lu, I forgot what was. Well, I mean, they all had English names.
British English names, yeah.
The only one, of course, Nanjing Lu was always Nanjing Lu.
Interesting.
But you could actually see, if you look at the architecture, it's much poorer. I mean, even the older architecture here is not, you don't get the mansions here that you get back in French Concession. Mansions around here are a lot of them smaller, they're more densely packed. You could tell they're a little bit more slummier. You know,
you can see, and they've been dilapidated, you know, and probably during the revolution they were broken up from large family homes into, communal living. But, you can see in their original heyday, they were not poor houses. They were big, they were dense, they were densely put together for sure. But they were nice homes in their original form.
They were definitely poorer than what they were in the French Concession. They were much more.
Oh, for sure.
You can even tell the one over there you pointed out first were in the red bricks. They're I think a little bit more expensive. But the ones closer to us, I think they look like from a cheaper material.
And probably more modern also.
The ones
we see here. When I notice, and I'm trying to find an example, when we walk by, I'll point it out. But if you look in the core of these Chinese neighborhoods, like around the outside, you see some not new, but maybe a little bit more modern buildings, maybe 100 years old.
Sure.
Or maybe 200, I don't know. When you go into the core of these little blocks and neighborhoods, you start to see very old architecture, like just stone archways, stacked stone block, all hand cut, just like old castle type of architecture, yeah. You know, with cornerstones and but it's just all stone archways, stuff you don't see anymore. People don't replicate that stuff anymore.
So I think what defines, there's two things that define, I think, Shanghai architecture, or at least not modern, of course, but at least the city, is Art Deco, that we all agree. I think it's one of the most prevalent features of the city.
Yeah,
I
mean, Art Deco for sure.
Is everywhere.
I hear that aside from Miami, this is the other largest cachet of Art Deco art pieces in the world.
So and to the listeners, you got to remember, like Shanghai, we'll say 100 years ago was, I think, bigger than Paris or its biggest. I mean, it was a major city. It was called the Pearl of the Orient, the Paris of the East, all that stuff, because I mean, it was as big or bigger than most cities, in Europe. And the other fact, actually, another aspect that you if you're listening to look up, is the other architectural aspect. This is called Shikoumen, which is basically Shikoumen, which basically means stone gate. And there is a big architectural kind of, in Beijing you got the Hutong, like the little alleyways, and here you have the Shikoumen, and these are urban subdivisions of Shanghai. But basically, they're a block, around. They have usually commercial areas around it and residential areas inside of it. And, everything was kind of positioned. You had at the gates, you had the haircut places, the massage, the nail, whatever, small stuff that both residents and maybe people who pass by who use. Outside, you had the big shops, you know, like whatever, stores and whatnot. And inside, you had residential and whatnot. And even right now, I mean, and this is if you visit Shanghai, it is beautiful. You could walk through these things and people are still living in them. And it's communal, like, bathrooms sometimes. Sometimes they have inside bathrooms, but usually it's communal. But, like, things like sinks are outdoors. Like, the sinks, you know, you do, you chop your vegetables and you cook outdoors. Like, right outside your, you know, why put it inside?
Yeah, exactly. The cooking area is right outside. Yeah. Sinks are outside. You know what actually reminds me of, if you look at some of the original Chinatowns in the U.S., it's the same type of architecture and setup you'd see there as far as design of blocks where, you know, it's a... maybe family business downstairs, and upstairs is living quarters, you know.
It's exactly like that. I mean, it's like the street was reserved for commercial business. I want to give a quick shout out to this website, which is I stumbled on today, and it was just amazing. It's called ShanghaiStreetStories.com. The stuff on it is fantastic, and they have like links to. Educational materials about Shanghai, about you know, things that happened here. They had links to a website that depicts a Dutch family that moved from somewhere or other. They went to Java, Dutch Indonesia, and then Shanghai, and they lived through the revolution. I mean, just one of the most amazing sites about China and Shanghai in particular, ShanghaiStreetStories.com. Look it up. It's amazing.
Definitely check it out.
Really, really good.
No, but for sure, check out this website and check out Google this map. What is it, Matt? What did you find under? Shanghai Municipal Council, old map of Shanghai.
History of Shanghai is so complex and diverse, and I was trying to read a book called Policing Shanghai, and it was just so over-encompassing and just so. Remember, you have these three different governments: the Chinese government, a local Chinese government. They govern the city. You know, they have very little to do or not much to do with the Qing dynasty. Then you have on the outside Qing kind of governors. Then you have the international element, the French element. The gangsters, who are basically their own government, their own police force, it is just incredible. Incredible how complex and deep the history goes. And, you know, like the foreign settlements had their own military force, you know, and they kind of ran around and did their thing. And when, interesting thing I read today was, you know, when you have the famous Peace Hotel on Nanjing Road, the Peace Hotel, originally called the Cathay Hotel. And then there's a Swatch Peace Hotel. And by accident, the Chinese Air Force, when they were trying to bomb a Japanese boat or whatever, ship, they dropped a bomb there, killed 1,600 people in late 1930s.
Holy shit.
It was the largest casualties from a single bomb up until that point. Crazy, right?
That's crazy.
Wow. Just, I mean, so much history, violence, and then, of course, you had the Jewish ghettos. But don't forget, they eventually interned all the foreigners, too, or a lot of the foreigners mm-hmm. got interned. And then they had this populations of half Chinese, half foreigners, and they didn't know what to do with them. Are they Chinese? Are they foreigners? It's a little bit like the problems that we talked about that China's going to face later. Like, who are these people? Like, how do you...
who are these people? A
mixed population.
Yeah, how do you deal with a mixed population? Yeah.
Interesting. Something that's... new again here, I guess.
That is, it is true. It's like that is really a big question. I mean,
yeah,
you really don't think about that in history. It's like, how do you deal with populations? Because you have an identity, and once you have an identity, and people start to fit into that identity, you have to think about how do you deal with this. I mean, of course, the rainbow fairy tales, you know, and butterscotch. You say everybody's equal, but that's not really the case until you make a law about it, and you can't make the law about that until you actually have that discourse of how do you deal with it.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is, like, you know, again, history rhymes. It doesn't repeat, but it rhymes. You know, Shanghai kind of had this problem before.
Yep.
And then they kind of just said, okay, we're going to restart, erase everything, no more foreigners, no more everything. And now we're kind of in the same place again. It's like these, you know, mixed nationals who moved here, live here for a long time.
What you said just made me think about all the different movies I've seen in my lifetime that somehow relate to these topics we're talking about, relating to like Bruce Lee movies about the foreign concessions.
Right.
Emperor of the Sun, I believe, was about this. That's one Emperor, way back.
Emperor of the Sun? You mean The Last Emperor?
Last Emperor also had to do with this issue, but
because Emperor
of the Sun, about I thought it was about prison camp, right?
It was a prison camp
about from foreigners living in Shanghai, I believe, right?
Was it in Shanghai?
Yes, I think it was.
In Shanghai. Was it maybe? No, yeah, maybe it was.
No,
I don't remember.
Really?
Try it out again.
I gotta watch it again because Emperor of the Sun was one of my favorite movies when I was a kid, but I never realized where it was. Because honestly, if they said an Asian place, it's just Asia.
Yeah, exactly.
They could have said Seoul, Shanghai,
did not
Bangkok,
matter.
Who gives a shit?
Right.
It's all Japan.
Anyway, I have to see it again myself because it's been a long time, but it's still relating to the same issues.
But I remember it was the biggest thing was the Japanese Zero versus the P-51 Mustang.
Yes, that's what it was about.
I mean, and it was the P-51, they called it the Cadillac of the Sky. The kid would love that shit.
Yes, I remember that. That's a Steven Spielberg movie, right?
Yeah,
It was.
Makes sense. Anyways, I just think about, I mean, all those movies regardless, somehow relate to all this kind of history.
And it stars Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Oh,
yes, it does.
Baby Bale.
Right.
Well, where was it?
Yes, British family in Shanghai.
Uh-huh. Shut up!
Oh, boom.
Actually, yeah, now that you say it, it does sound familiar.
Yep.
How, because they lived in the neighborhoods for a while before they were forced to kind of.
I saw this in the theaters when it came out. I remember that's how old I am. Yeah, all right. Yeah.
Oh, you saw it in the theaters?
Yeah. Just to bring it back to...
When did it come out? I think I was about 11 years old.
87.
Okay, well, I wasn't 11 years old. Mm-hmm. I was 9.
All right.
8, sorry.
Great movie.
Yeah, I was thinking about how many movies just relate to this in different aspects of what
great
we're
movie,
about.
Actually. I'm going to watch it again.
I
wonder if it has staying power.
Yeah, I bet it does, man. It's a pretty classic tale.
But I think we all recommend to our listeners Empire of the Sun, early Steven Spielberg movie.
Very good movie.
And by the way, the Last Emperor for that matter.
I was just gonna say I just watched about 45 minutes of The Last Emperor the other day because you know it's a 4-hour movie or whatever the fuck it is. It's absolutely ridiculous. I thought it was boring when I was a kid. It's boring when I'm an adult too.
Yeah.
It is one.
It is
boring.
Long.
Yeah. It's
it is long as
boring.
The day is whatever.
Boring. Yeah, probably more interesting to watch a documentary about The Last Emperor. Right?
There's two parts I remember of that thing. Okay, so I was watching the other day, and he was riding his bike. He found out his mother died, and then it was a half hour thing of how he got his bike, rode it through the Forbidden City, out to the gates. This is 20 minutes already. He got to the gate 20 minutes later. The guards closed the gates. He threw a temper tantrum, and then he started riding back. And that was about 45 minutes. And I couldn't understand what the hell was going on, but it was powerful. No, to say the least, I could see why.
When I was a kid, when I watched it, I just remember like there's a scene where he's like 10 years old and he's still nursing. You know, you're just like, I was like, what is going on? Now it kind of makes sense. But
remember the part where they showed his poops?
Yeah.
They pooped in the bowl. And they're like the royal poops.
The doctor's checking out his royal poop.
Yes. It almost sounds like an Eddie Murphy Coming to America sketch or something.
Still a good movie.
It's a great movie. Great movie.
What, Coming to America or Emperor of the Sun?
Both.
Or Last Emperor?
All three.
I'm sorry, The Last Emperor, they big acclaim, but I cannot sit through that whole fucking movie.
I watched it in two parts.
There's an intermission and they put in the middle of it.
Yeah. That's and the intermission was a couple of days long. We're trying to really push this podcast forward, so I think what we'd like everyone to do is review us on iTunes.
Please.
That will help us a lot. You don't have to give us a 5-star review. Yeah, you do. Yeah, give us a 5-star review. But come on, review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, tell your friends. If you have questions about China, industry in here, working, da-da-da, send us a message. We're also highly active on Reddit.
We are active on Reddit.
But I think the best thing is on our Facebook, again, /ChinaMSG.
My Reddit is ChinaBorn. You can find me as ChinaBorn.
How do you spell that?
China, B-O-R-N.
There you go. So send us messages on Twitter, ChinaMSGpod.
No, I could have just made it David Tan.
Yeah. message us if you have if you have on Twitter, if you have any questions. Like I said, we're going to put all the images up, Shanghai's stories, pictures, websites, links.
We have pictures.
Again, Typing Rebellion, check it out. Amazing.
And the pictures.
And the pictures. Anything else to mention?
That's all we got.
China.
Boop, 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 MSG.